Welcome to the Generic Foiling Podcast with myself, Freddie, and Dominic Hoskins of, well, we're going to say Axis Foil Drive and YouTube fame. This is actually the second attempt at recording this episode. Dominic and I have already chatted for a couple of hours, but through technical difficulties have nothing to share with you all. So now we're back, but the bonus side is we've got Freddie. I feel like because of that, Dom, I've kind of already had a conversation with you and... Therefore, I could just start chatting about random crap right from the beginning. But how are you a week later from our last recording?
Well, for continuity's sake, yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me, I should say, back again. It's a bit weird, but second time, first time round.
I hope you're not expecting me to carry the conversation either, judging by the fact that it's 10 past 7 in the morning and I'm knackered. So you definitely can't palm off all the questions onto me.
Oh, that was very much the plan. Before we get stuck into anything, I'll just warm us up by telling you about my session yesterday, if you like.
Please do.
So I think you'd said you'd listened to the recent episodes, Dom, where we've had access to this downwind board, this Supfoil board from Armstrong, and I've very much been enjoying using that and had these Supfoil sessions and was like, oh my god, and I've used it. I had a good light wind winging session again the other day. It actually saved a session. In Exmouth we get these southeasterlies, and this weekend just gone there was actually a demo event here in Exmouth.
Okay, demoing so what?
Loads of foil gear we had. It was mainly winging stuff, to be fair, but like, everybody was here. AFS was here, Armstrong was here, Duotone, Fnatic, Ozone, Axis, Apple Tree stuff. Cool. Like, we had loads of gear here.
And leading up to a mini AWSI.
Oh, it's probably better than, to be honest.
Of course it was.
the coffees were probably better. Hang Time Cafe, shout out.
Oh, did I not tell you about the peanut butter coffees that we had at Hood River?
Oh, no.
I'm converted over to what is it called, the Sasquatch. It was if you want an energy boost as well as, you know, getting your caffeine kick, then that's the way to do it. Just blend in peanut butter to a nice coffee. Gorgeous.
I'm not gonna. No, that's not happening. Mate, I'll try it. If we get there next year, I'll try it. But
yeah, I'll take you there. It's a wicked cafe.
I ain't gonna start putting it in my normal coffee day to day. Not yet.
Sounds like admin. So there was this, the forecast was looking really solid, which is almost never happens for a UK demo event. It's like a bit of a curse that if you arrange anything, there won't be any wind, there won't be any conditions. And the forecast was looking very good. It was actually easterly, which is like Exmouth's best direction, where not only can you do all the wind sports, but you actually get swell as well.
Cool.
Sure enough, the closer you get to the event, the more dismal it gets. And actually, this weekend just gone, it turned out we had so much rainfall that there was flash flooding all across the country, including the southwest. So the local city was actually flooding and there was barely any wind. But a little bit did trickle through on the Sunday. And there was probably an hour where it came through pretty solid. Everybody was out. And I was a little bit later getting down to the beach. Knew that the forecast was really sketchy. I'd looked at the pressure charts and there was like troughs everywhere, so I took this downwind board, and within about 20 minutes I'd made my way out the back and I was in the waves having a bit of fun playing around, and I felt the wind drop, but you know, it was more than enough to get going on this thing. And I just watched every single winger that was out on the water unable to go. And there must have been a period of about 45 minutes where I was just continuing to have a session where it was like borderline breezy and people were trying and they'd get up every now and then. But I was just having literally a session to myself. Not only that, they were in flat water, whereas I was in the waves. So like making it more difficult to start, and it just wasn't a problem.
And so, because you were using...
Because of that downwind board.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the one that you told me about last time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The conversation really that never happened because we've lost it to ether.
Exactly. So...
remind me the dimensions of the board.
7'7", 120 litres, and I don't know, what are they, 20 inches wide, something like that?
Around that, 19 and a half or 20 and a half.
So I was like, still on the, you know, frothing on this board phase and very positive about it. And then last night I tried to go out. There's really strong onshore winds all day yesterday, and then the wind dropped off in the evening, so there was a swell, but it was all a bit messy. Tried to go out, sup foiling again, but this time not in glassy, you know, surf beach conditions, but there's been 30 knots onshore all day and it's no longer windy conditions. Absolute disaster. Absolute disaster. I could not stand on the board, and I've gone from being like, oh, I'm quite excited to actually have a go at downwinding, to sod this. If I'm going to try this, get that bloody foil drive back on.
I'm glad you've seen the light. Yeah, it's crazy, because I have had quite a few goes with those long, narrow downwind boards myself, and although they do serve a purpose, there's no doubt whatsoever that when you are proficient, they will help you get up on four like no other boards can, but you still have to be fairly proficient. You still have to have, you know, a certain level of skill, a certain level of balance, a certain level of fitness. And I tried them when we did our trip to Thailand for the Sunnova Board Dealers Conference. I've tried them various times since then in Australia. And every single time, I spend more time falling off the damn things than I do actually on foil. And yeah, if that's what you want to do, and you like that sort of style of foiling, and you want that... you want that sort of feeling of achievement, of paddling up yourself, and you know, you've not had any mechanical help whatsoever. If that's your thing, then, you know, respect, fair play to you guys. It's absolutely... I'm never going to try and undermine that feeling of sense of achievement. But for me, I just can't be bothered with it. I do not see the point in making life that much more difficult for myself when I know that I can be on foil instantly like that with foil drive. And once I'm up on foil, it's irrelevant. It becomes... You know, it becomes so insignificant that I can do what I want to do, which is be on foil. I can use smaller foils, I can use tiny boards, and I can utilize every single second that I've got on the water for foiling, rather than swearing, drinking seawater, worrying about whether I'm going to get my legs bitten off by a great white, because they are around here. And, you know, it's just, for me, it's a no-brainer. But I do understand why a lot of people would like to battle through for that sense of accomplishment and do it by themselves.
Let's try both and see. So I suppose we ought to rewind then.
Well, I can go the rewind if you want to, because I wasn't there, Freddie, the first time. I guess your name has... It's quite now synonymous with foiling, and I know over here in the UK especially, I wasn't the only one that as soon as a new wing comes out, or as soon as, you know, I have a inclination to want to learn how to water start a slightly smaller board or something, I expect, and I've told customers before, just go and have a look at Dom Hoskins' videos on YouTube, go and see what he's said on the Axis foil. You just became one of those people very quickly. That became a name in foiling, aside from being a pro rider. How did that happen then? Where did foiling start?
So you're going to have to forgive me laughing now, because pro rider, I do not consider myself to be a pro rider by a million miles. And as for this whole sort of, you know, people knowing me and my name and what I do, I was not even aware of. You know, I knew people watching my videos, but I didn't know anybody sort of knew me for, you know, doing, you know, like you've just said, for you know, maybe being one of their port of calls for looking up, you know, foiling sort of equipment reviews or technique type tutorials, that sort of stuff. But when we went to Hood River, it just blew me away. The amount of people we were, you know, setting up, we were, you know, going on the water, getting off the water, and people would come up to me and do a double take and go, hey, you're that guy who does all those videos. And I'm like, yeah, I suppose so. So this is very new to me, and I'm not sort of used to it at all. And I'd still sort of can't quite comprehend when this sort of thing happens. But yeah, it started off through frustration. Literally, when I started foiling, there was nothing on the internet, no instructions, no YouTube videos, apart from a few people going, hey, look at me, I'm doing this. And you know, I would literally analyzed the hell out of everything that I could come across and find. And dock starting for me, we had no docks. I started off jumping off the side of a boat. And, you know, unless it's glassy, you know, even a little bit of swell just causes all sorts of problems. So, I started off jumping off a boat and took me hundreds of tries before I cracked it. And then COVID struck and all I could do for ages was jump off my boat, wake foil, that sort of stuff. Everything was closed apart from the marina, bizarrely enough. So I was still allowed to go out in my boat. And once COVID was over, rather than drive half an hour down to the marina, I saw somebody jumping off a ladder. This is somewhere in Eastern Europe. It was just literally just a 10-second clip of somebody jumping off a ladder onto a foil board. And you couldn't even see him because, he'd set up his camera on a still position and he foiled off into the distance. And I was like, that looks like a good idea. So I set up a ladder and it fell over. Surprise, surprise. So I built myself a little platform at the top and I made it a little bit better. And that was it for me. That was literally outside my front door where I was living at the time in Amman. Just walk across the roads. There's the beach. Put the ladder in there. Jump, 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 jump. And I got to the point where I was doing it consistently. And I was actually beginning to pump out, ride the swell back to the ladder. And a few times I even managed to pump out to the wind line and do like a 1 or a 2K downwinder. And then phone up my partner and ask her for a lift on the way back. And there's one time where I was just having such a good time that I forgot to come in at the 2K mark. And I ended up, I think, 8K down because there was just nowhere else to come in. And I recognised, oh, that's the start of the golf course. If I don't come in there, I've probably got another 10K before there's another opportunity to come in. So I sort of, I came in there at that point, which is about 8K. I got my phone out of the waterproof bag and I phoned up my girlfriend and I said, can you come and pick me up? She said, yeah, okay, just on my way. By the way, when you get to the point where you turn off the road, just keep going another 8K. I'll be waving at the side of the road. And it was that sort of thing where I was doing so much dock starting and I just thought, right, I'm going to save people some pain. I'm going to put out my experiences. I'm going to do a few tutorials. And before I knew it, I had people messaging me with questions and clearly interacting. And that's how it started. I didn't mean to become a YouTuber or an influencer. I just sort of fell into it because people were clearly interested and finding what I was doing useful. So I said to my kids at the time, I said, well,
I think a lot of the main thing as well was the fact that you could actually articulate a lot of these things. Whereas a lot of the idiots on YouTube just kind of tell you how frothed they are about stuff and how stoked we are about this new wing.
Like, comment, subscribe.
Exactly. Come and watch me do this stupid thing that doesn't mean anything and I can't teach you anything from it. It was your videos.
That was my frustration.
They've now gotten very long, I will say, Tom.
You're not the first person to say that.
Freddy, you're one to talk when you host a podcast, aren't you?
Yeah, but mine's a lot less useful. I suppose we do waffle, don't we? But mine's inane, useless.
Have you ever watched something or listened to something that you think is too long or waffly? I love the nerdy, geeky detail. I listen to anyone and everyone as long as there is sort of opinion, as long as there is experience, and as long as there's something new. If I've heard it five times before, then maybe not. But foiling's traveling so quickly, and pretty much anything everybody's got to say, I can get something out of because it's from their perspective. And that's something I learned very, very early on, that I can give my perspective on it, but somebody else might have a completely different perspective. And that's what I love about foiling. I love about this whole discussion that you can have with somebody at a completely different level or the same level, riding different gear, different discipline. We're all getting something new out of it. And I think we can all learn from each other about all those different experiences, no matter what level you are.
Speaking of which, because you started with the dock start, now that you've had the opportunity to try all of these different disciplines and you've also had the opportunity to travel and try some really cool conditions and stuff, would you, knowing what you know now, would you do it all the same again? What I mean by that is, like, is dock starting and that sensation enough to justify the effort?
That's a really good point. Would I do it differently?
Especially when COVID was probably a massive helper for
it
you,
was.
For you learning how to foil. It's the same when we talked to Tom Earle, and he's like, all I did through COVID was learn to surf foil. But if we didn't have COVID, it would might have been a bit different.
Freddie and I always ask ourselves, we're like, how the hell does somebody look at foiling and then go, I'm going to learn that, and then go dock starting and just get into it that way because it's so hard?
Yeah, and I have to admit that if COVID hadn't have forced me to put the time into it, I probably wouldn't have focused on it so much. But I was living in Oman at the time, and you kindly say that I can articulate things clearly, and that's very kind of you. I think it's because
should we let Liam do what the fuck he's doing?
I'm just plugging my laptop in.
Yeah, well, you're making a racket doing it.
What is it? Thinking of a bit of spring cleaning while we're having a chat? Yeah.
Don't mind me. I'm just going to smash this glass next door to...
Rearranging his furniture. It wasn't quite feng shui enough for him. He thought
obviously not.
Oh, now he's left us in a huff.
Fuck's sake.
Should we carry on or do we wait?
Well, the problem is he'll make a racket when he comes back in as well. Yeah, let's carry on. Go on then. So,
okay.
Starting with dock starting.
Yeah, so I was living in Oman at the time, and I was a teacher, science teacher in a British international school. Have been a teacher for absolutely years, which is probably why you kindly said that I'm quite good at articulating things. That's probably why, because I'm used to, you know, analysing and disseminating information in a way that hopefully is fairly clear to understand. But yeah, dock starting and obviously all the other unique conditions that I had in Oman, which was predominantly light thermal winds pretty much every day. It's either between, 8 and 12 knots or between sort of 6 and 10 knots. We do get some completely glassy, flat, windless days, but most of the time, like 80% of the time, it's that sort of 8 to 12 knot range. We do get a lot of storms that push through in the Persian Gulf and as a result, we can get some really big wind and good surf as well. But really for me, it started off with dock starting and light wind winging, which I've got to say started off as a complete disaster for me because I came back from one of my summer holiday breaks from the UK with my first ever lot of foiling gear. And it was a subfoil setup. With a 4 meter wind wing, because that's all that was available in at the time. And of course, 4 meter in, 8 to 12 knots is, it's completely useless. And I struggled and I struggled and I struggled for ages. Just for ages, I thought it was me. I was just like pumping and I could feel the potential of getting up on foil. I could feel like sometimes I'm nearly there. And I think if I had 14 knots rather than just 10 or 12, I probably could, because I was on the GoFoil Maliko 280 at that stage. You can pump that up with a with a hanky in 15 knots. But I'd done a few bits of wake foiling and I knew what riding the foil was like. I just couldn't pump myself up onto the foil with a 4 meter. So I did my research and I got myself a 7 meter. And then it literally just changed. I was up nearly every day without too many problems. Light wind winging, hence all the videos about light wind equipment, big foils, flat water pumping, followed dock starting, all that sort of stuff. And of course, a lot of wake foiling. I mean, I did a huge amount of wake foiling. And that was where I think I managed to sort of be able to judge or tell the subtle differences, the subtle nuances of just changing out a rear stab or changing a fuse or, shimming, certainly changing, sizes, what the limits are in terms of stall speed or roll or yaw and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's when Adrian he offered to start sending me some gear. Some of it was prototype stuff for testing and giving him feedback. And some of it was just, he let me have it at a, not free, just at a reasonable discount and said, if you like it, keep it. If you don't, sell it on and you won't have lost much money on it. That was when the relationship with Axis started. It's gone a long way since then. But yeah, have cool. I answered what you asked?
I can't remember what I asked now, but it was really interesting hearing it. No, that's exactly it. It was just a really fun. It was the right time. You were there at exactly the right time, and like you said, the fact that you were talking about probably the bigger wings, although it worked for you in Oman in the lighter winds. Like the UK, I've talked to Adrian about this before when he came out with the HPS, and he's like, "Oh, the 700 is fantastic, and everyone loves it." And I'm like, "Adrian, no one's going to fucking buy this tiny little wing, because all we're talking about is big wings in the UK, and that's why they've done so well over here." And it also, I can say I'm very thankful to you, because starting out, and Liam will laugh about it, but we've all been foiling at the same sort of time, and I was suddenly getting asked questions. I was thrust two new sets of wings, i.e. BSC and HPS in the Axis range. Go and sell them. I don't know what the fuck they are. I can't ride them. I can't, especially, you know, the HPS stuff. I remember talking to Stefan and Eric down in Exmouth, where Liam worked at the time and where we ride all the time, and them almost just kind of laughing me out of the park, because I had trying to have this conversation with these guys that are way better foilers than me already about kit that I didn't know. But I could go on YouTube and I could suddenly start piecing bits and pieces together by the use of your videos. And it was like you and Wake Thief.
Devin.
At the time. He's so cool. And especially because both of you were getting so nerdy about it as well. Like a lot of it, some of it went over my head for sure, but nobody else, you know, we've laughed about it a lot in the past that we don't like really talking to pro riders as such because they generally don't have much to say. Well, you were the complete opposite. You had something to say, and it was actually useful, and that's what people
apparently
wanted. Far too much, absolutely far too. it was brilliant. It was really good. So it just came along at the right sort of time. So thank God you had COVID in Oman, I guess, and you still got to go out on the boat.
and it was a good introduction to those big wings, because I said I started off with the Go For Maluco 280. And I did learn to dock start on that. But then the GLs came out and I got the GL 240, and that was fun. And then it was Matt Barker-Smith from Full Surf UK, who I got my first ever foiling gear from, who actually put me in touch with Adrian, and Adrian spoke to me and he said, "Oh, I've seen you do a lot of flat water pumping. We've got a new foil coming out. It's called the PNG 1150. I'd like you to, you know, to see what you think of it." It blew me away. It was just the best foil I'd ever used for flat water pumping. And yeah, from that point, me and Adrian were talking a lot and discussing the finer points. So I wouldn't change anything about how I started, although it would have been nice to have done it without a global pandemic. That could have been a little, you know, the icing on the cake maybe. But no, I think even though the pain that I went through I think that we've all been through in developing our skills is part of the process. And my only aim in producing these videos was to try and help people in, like I say, saving some of that pain, but also avoiding my frustrations, where I only found, I think, for dock starting, 5 videos, and it was just literally somebody going, "Look at me, I'm doing it," and they did it. But no explanation whatsoever. So I thought, if I can just talk people through it and how I find it and, you know, what I find helps and doesn't work, then it might help people. And yeah, it turned out that it's a huge surprise for myself. It turned out that it did help.
Were you entirely intrinsically motivated, or was there a little part of you that wanted to get that Instagram clip of your doc start on the internet as well?
Do you know, I'm proud to say I had no desire to be, you know, videoed or put out there at all, because if you talk to my kids, you know, they've taught me everything that I know about, which isn't much still to this day, about Instagram, YouTube, this, that and the other. And, I would be a very happy person right now if I had never posted anything on the internet. But the fact that it's the parent, the teacher, maybe there's a little bit of an extrovert in me, because I consider myself to be more introvert than extrovert. But yeah, I do like it when I have the feeling that I'm helping people, and that's definitely why I became a teacher. So now to be able to work in the water sports industry and the foiling industry itself is just, you know, a bit of a a dream come true, because I can still do what I like to do, which is to sort of help people by informing them, by, you know, giving my experiences. But also I'm really at the forefront of development of a lot of really cool gear, both in four drive and Axis.
Going back before we go on to the foil drive stuff, and so you're a teacher. What do you teach? How long were you in Oman? How long? What took you to Oman of all places as well? What happened?
I taught in the UK for about 9 years, and me and my kids sort of, we'd always planned to live abroad for, you know, part of our lives, and it just seemed that that was a good time to do it. And I applied for 3 jobs. I got 3 interviews. I only got 1 offer. That particular place was British School Muscat in Oman. I knew of Oman. I didn't know much about it. I researched the hell out of it, like I do with everything in my life. And it looked pretty cool. So I went out 2 weeks before my kids. The plan was that if I didn't think it was suitable for them or me, but especially for them, then I'd pull the plug, come back, and I hadn't disturbed, you know, uprooted their lives. And, you know, I could just carry on in the UK. Turned out it was amazing. Within 2 days, I knew it was going to work out right. It was just one of those schools that's very well run. Intrinsically, it's all about the students. It's a non-profit school. It was run pretty much exactly like a UK community school, state school, which I'd always taught in anyway. And Oman is just the most beautiful country. The locals are just the most welcoming people that I've ever found in all my travelling. It's just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. There's 2,000 kilometres of coastline. There's, deserts. There's the spice route, you know, the Bedouin trail. There's the mountains, wadis. It really is just, I mean, they've got such diverse wildlife as well, from, you know, turtles to whales to, I mean, I've swum with sharks many, many times there, because they have these black-tip reef sharks, which are the non-aggressive kind. They are more timid of us than we are of them. And literally, I've been snorkeling around this island called Fahal Island. Fahal translates to shark, surprisingly enough, because it's the topography of the ocean floor around the island means that one half of it is this perfect shark nursery, because it's nice and warm with shallow beaches, and the other side is super deep, so they get all of the currents bringing all of these nutrients in the water, which then allows, very unusually, allows a lot of sort of marine life to flourish in even in the shallow waters, and that attracts, you know, small fish, attracts medium fish, attracts bigger fish, and then the sharks feed on everything, and it's perfect for them. So we get to swim around these sharks, which have never bothered anybody, and certainly in the 8 years that I was there. Yeah, literally 6 black tips just circling around underneath us. School of rays over there, and shoals of barracuda literally tunneling through the current as it passes the island.
I'm just having a look on Google Maps at the minute, because I wasn't, you know, Oman's just one of those places that I've never been to.
Just below the UAE, So Dubai and Abu Dhabi, as part of the 7 Emirates of the UAE, and then just literally south of that, hugging the east and south coastline of the Arab states there.
And where were you in the country? Where's the school?
I was in Muscat. Okay. Muscat is the main city, which is fairly north. I went down to Salalah, the southernmost city, which is, I mean, if you consider that nearly all of Oman is desert, Salalah is just in the semi-tropical zone, so it's crazy. You're driving 9.5 hours down to Salalah, and you get to the last half hour, and suddenly it's like somebody's flipped a switch and like rolled in this scenery of lush palm trees and banana plantations and date palms and papaya trees and literally camels, more camels than you can actually see. It's just crazy, and really cool surf, really good surf. So it's a shame in 8 years I only got down there once, but there's so many other places. That, you know, the Middle East is such a cool place to travel from, because, you know, you can go in any direction, and you are in super cool sort of places to explore.
I guess we just don't see it as a holiday destination over here, do we, at all? It's obviously had a fairly bad rap.
It's not on anyone's radar. Mm. Yeah, it's part of the Middle East, and you know, all the Arab states, it does, like you say, it's a bad rap, because the vast majority of those places are amazing. They're expensive, mind, they're expensive. I could only really survive there financially because it was a tax-free salary. But that doesn't mean to say I was able to save a shed ton of money, because it's very expensive to live there. And obviously you've got to, you know, travelling back to the UK to see my family at least once or twice a year, or having them come out once or twice a year. So we got to see each other three times a year for, you know, decent periods of time. But
where are you based? Where are your family based in the UK? Where are you from?
Southwest of, well, very close to you guys, actually. I hail from Somerset. Spent a lot of my windsurfing time in and around Exmouth, that sort of area. Mostly Portland Harbour was where I learnt to windsurf and then kite surf, with a few trips down Cornwall. And I started off windsurfing, then I transferred over to kite surfing. By the time I got to Oman, I was still kite surfing, but didn't like the conditions there. It's always light wind. It's always sort of disturbed water state, but, you know, never proper waves. When I was kite surfing, I either liked flat water from Portland Harbour or proper waves down in Cornwall, that sort of thing. But that sort of in between the two, it never really did it for me. So I started sup surfing because foiling didn't exist then. And then, me and my girlfriend were travelling around the southwest of France for one summer holiday break. And she's only got herself to blame for me foiling. She really does. It's literally all her fault, because we were in the hotel, in a hotel one day, and we were just chilling after a long journey to get there. And she showed me a phone. She said, you sup surf. What are the? I think they're sup surfing, but I'm not sure. What are they doing? It turned out it was Derek Hamasaki, who was doing his absolutely crazy sup foiling, linking waves on his Jimmy Lewis board with a go foil, and cranking turns on wave faces, riding the wave, turning back, pumping out, and linking at least five or six. And I didn't know what the hell he was doing. I just looked at it, and something, a little light bulb went off in my head, and I don't know what the hell that is, but I'm sure as hell going to be doing it in a year's time. And the next day, we were just driving around this huge lake called Biscarrosse. It's on the Atlantic coast, quite a bit just below Bordeaux, quite a bit above Biarritz, for your reference. Biscarrosse, it's amazing. Huge lakes. Literally, you can't even see. To all intents and purposes, they're small oceans in the middle of the land. We were just looking for some bike hire to do some cycling, and we drove past these huts, and she said, "Oh, look, that sign said wake foiling rentals or hire or lessons or something," and literally slammed my foot on the brakes. Right. We drove in there. We arranged a lesson for the next day, and I actually got up on foil on my third time, and because I'd done a lot of wake boarding and wake surfing by then. So getting up on foil, you know, third attempt, wobbly. It was a Takuma Concept V1 or 100, something like that. They're really curved. I mean, it looked like a Kai, Go Foil Kai foil. But yeah, I was hooked, absolutely hooked. And when we got back from France, we had a week in the UK. I Google searched where I could buy foiling equipment from. The only place that came up that looked like it was, you know, had a decent range and looked like they knew what they were talking about was Matt Barker-Smith at Foil Surf UK, or the Sup Hut. Literally went there the next day, spent $2,500 and took it all back to Oman with me. And I pipped at the post. I was really gutted, but I was not the first person with foiling equipment in Oman. I was the second, because I didn't even know, but this guy Korai, who was he managed the Oman youth sailing and windsurfing team. Really cool guy, supernatural talent. He had not a wing. He was sensible. He didn't buy a 4 meter wing like me, but he had an F1 sup board and foil. And I basically started trying to sup foil, and a friend of mine that I didn't even know knew this guy, so obviously she was a mutual friend of ours, she saw what I was doing and said, "Oh, Corey's got one of those. And I was going, no, I'm the only person in the man, surely. And it turned out I wasn't. So damn it, I got beaten to that. Yeah, everything I've done is first. I wasn't the first person to ladder start. I wasn't the first person to use full drive on prone boards. But I'm pretty damn sure I was the second at those two.
It's all right. You can test that you were the first customer, so you'll have to just take that as your first place.
Well, first paying customer. Yeah, I'm gutted because my original foil drive assist, serial number 0002, but they gave the first one to a friend of theirs, literally gave it to them because he'd helped them so much with all the product testing and all, just helping them out generally, and being a long-term friend of theirs. So, yeah, first paying customer. Imagine their surprise when they got an email from some twat in Oman going, oh, I want to buy one of your... Sure, where do we send it to? Do you know a place called Oman? No.
Sounds like spam. We'll send a courier to your door with cash.
Yeah. God, it was a nightmare getting it shipped to Oman as well. They don't like things like lithium-ion batteries.
Yeah. What was the first attraction then about foil drive?
Right. Yes, I was on the verge of buying an e-foil. And again, I've got my girlfriend to thank, who's now my fiancée, by the way. She,
congratulations.
Thank you. It happened before COVID, but we've, you know, wedding got put off. And since then, we've never been in the same country for long enough to actually get married. It is the intention. yeah, I was very close to pulling the pin on an e-foil. Not that I could afford it, but I was so desperate to do something in those. Because back then, even a 7 meter in the, I think I was on the Takuma Kajiris. No, it was just before that. I was still on the GoFalls, but I think it was the GL range by then. I was so desperate to utilize those like 6 to 10 knot days. And I could just about, in the gusts, I could just about pump myself up onto foil with the 7 meter. But it wasn't much fun, even when I was on foil. You know, it was just one of those things that I was thinking, I need something else to satisfy my craving for foiling on those days where there's definitely no swell or waves. The wind is just too light to wing. So I was looking at it, and then, like I say, I researched the hell out of everything, no matter what I do. And I could tell from any video, even if the foiler is in the distance, I could tell from the shape of the board, I could tell from the stance of the rider what e-foil it was. Whether it was Lift, Flight, Takuma. There weren't that many around at the time, to be honest. Anyway, saw one video, somebody clearly e-foiling around, but it was a pretty small board and it didn't look like anything else I'd seen. So I zoomed in on it and I managed to catch the logo, Foil Drive. So I typed into Google Foil Drive and I came up with their website. Turned out that they'd launched it 2 days before I found it. They'd launched the website, they'd made it live. So I emailed them and I said, look, this is what I think your product can help me do. This is what I really am hoping it can help me do. Can you tell me a bit more about it? And after a couple of short emails, I got a phone call from Paul, the owner, who literally talked me through it. Total honesty about what it was capable of, what it's not capable of. And yeah, he didn't need to speak for more than 5 minutes. I was sold. I was just like, take my money, send it to me as quick as you can. And yeah, I got it with, I think, 2 days before I left to go to the UK for the Christmas holidays. So I used it twice. And it was the worst holiday I've had in the UK of my life, because the whole time I was just wanting to get back on the water and to continue pushing foil drive. Because I could tell instantly that it was going to help me to do what I wanted to do, which was to try and, you know, sup foil in super small. We get a lot of swell, but we don't get many proper waves with faces. So it's very difficult to paddle up onto foil. Sup downwinding as well. It's, you know, by that stage I was, you know, pretty competent at wing downwinding with a wind wing. But that, you know, sup downwinding was really where I wanted to go. Prone downwinding wasn't even on my radar at the time. You know, I was wake foiling on a tiny little 32 litre board, but I loved that. But it never even occurred to me even then that, you know, I could stand a chance of downwinding on a prone board. So yeah, the appeal to me was to be able to get up on foil in the conditions that we had here, and I had back then when I was in Oman, for sup downwinding and sup surfing. And it allowed me to do that so much better than I thought. I had no idea, even that I was going to be able to pump. I was thinking, okay, it'll help me get up on foil, but I'll never be able to pump with it. And that was my aim, to use foil drive to help to teach me to get up on foil. And then, you know, once I'm better at that, I'll be able to bin the foil drive and, you know, pump to link waves. But my God, you know, it's like I said before, it's almost irrelevant once you're up on foil. It almost disappears. It becomes, you know, it's like it's not even there. And I was pumping to link waves. This is still with big foils. This is with the PNG 1150, the PNG 1300, the PNG 1010. I was big on the PNGs back then. And then to my surprise, I just started using it, testing it out with smaller and smaller boards and foils.
That would have been the first one that, because it's now the Assist Plus, that would have been the Assist. What's the realistic difference in the capabilities of the two? Is it just battery size, or is motor power different too?
Both. Yeah, both. There's a significant increase in both. So the Assist is perfectly fine for getting up on foil with a SUP board, in sort of any situation, whether it's wing foiling, downwinding, surfing, that sort of stuff. You can use it with the right board and foil for popping up onto, well, once you're up on foil, to ollie up and then pump around on flat water, but you know, you've got to deal with a big board. The Assist Plus was basically, I think it was about 30% more power and certainly a lot more runtime, but they also had options like the big battery and the small battery. And the really cool thing was you could connect two small batteries together to form a medium battery. But that's not the cool thing. The cool thing is you can carry two small batteries on a plane with you. So you can now travel with your Assist and or Assist Plus. No, sorry, that's only the Assist Plus. The Assist only has one battery, which is too big for flying. So yeah, more power, more runtime, meant that I could then use smaller boards or smaller foils. And it just evolved into something that I wasn't expecting, which, because like in foiling, everything you do is all about efficiency of technique and skill. So when you start off, I was like, I can't do this. What's going on? It felt like, I don't know, standing on a bowling ball covered in grease on an ice rink. It's literally, I was all over the shop trying to learn how to sup foil. But you get better at it. You build your skill. You become, you know, better in all respects. And before you know it, you are literally reacting to things without even thinking about it. You're making corrections through feel, an instinct, if you like, rather than, because things are happening so quickly that you can't go, oh, I now need to change my position to alter my body, you know, my center of mass and all that sort of stuff. You've got to just do it and feel it. And this is why I love the Voyager Foiler crew, because they are so in my, or let's say I relate to what they talk about when they're talking about flow state. I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but just bear with me here, because I used to do triathlon, and not the Ironman, but smaller, shorter distances. And I genuinely used to get into flow states of whether it was running or cycling and sometimes swimming. Actually, sorry, no, it was mostly when I was swimming and running. I was a little bit scared in the cycling stages because I'd fallen off a few times, and that is not cool when you fall off a bike at speed. But swimming and running, I literally could get myself into a state where it felt effortless. It felt like I could just do what I was doing for hours. And my mind, you know, is sort of, it's just that not total euphoria, but a very sort of relaxed state of mind. Now for foiling, it's like that as well when I'm downwinding, but even better because you're having to navigate the ocean, and this is going to sound really hippie-ish now, but it's not only the state of mind, that flow state I was talking about, but also the fact that I feel connected with nature. Oh my God, I've just said it. There you go. I am a hippie at heart. Seriously. It's
unbelievable.
I love full admission, there you go. I just love that feeling of being able to tap into the energy that nature is providing, and you've got to sort of be at one with nature. And when I was at Hood River, the conditions were so good. The only thing I've got against the hatchery is that it's so good, you don't need to get into that flow state. You can literally, right, so the swell wasn't as the biggest I've ever foiled in, but it was certainly the most consistent. And the swell period is pretty short as well. So I knew very, very quickly that if I make a mistake, there's going to be another big bit of swell behind me to you know, connect onto. So I knew that I could just hammer it without making any concessions for sort of like having to find the flow of energy within the swell. And as a result, that's the only thing I regret from my time at Hood River, was that I didn't allow myself to find that flow state when I was foiling downwinding in the hatchery, because I just saw all these amazing swell lumps and bumps, and I was just, right, let's see what the Spitfires can do, crank it on every possible opportunity. If I made a mistake, another bump behind me picked me up, and yeah, you don't even have to think about it. It's a bit of a shame, but hey ho, there's next year.
You say that about a lot of things, can't you, really? It's like we get jealous that you get all those conditions in Hawaii, or you get, like, talking to Oscar about doing the downwinding in Hawaii, and he's like, it's just so easy in comparison. It is good, and it's fantastic that it's good like that, but it also then...
That's odd, because I've been told by so many people who live or have visited Hawaii that they say it's actually harder. Once you're at a certain level, yeah, like Oscar, I mean, he's up there with the best in the world, but I think maybe he finds it easy because, you know, he's at the level that he can cope with it. Whereas if I went there, I'm now a competent downwinder, but I think I would struggle to sort of find my way in the swell and the bumps that they had, the conditions that they have in Hawaii. And I'll tell you why. It's because I had dialed in downwinding in Amman, like, you know, it was... I knew exactly where the bumps were about to form. I knew exactly what pattern I had to move in if I wanted to push forward, or if I wanted to carve back, or if I wanted to pump for a bit. I knew it all. But as soon as I got to Australia, it was like, hey guys, let's go for a downwinder. And my, I was humbled to say, like, out of the first five downwinders that we did, two of them I had to come in halfway through, and one of them I barely made it to the end because the conditions are so different. And I had to learn the pattern or the energy flow of the ocean here in Adelaide, which is completely different to in Amman. And I imagine that in Hawaii, it's going to rack it up a notch even further. And if I go there, I'm not going to make the same mistake.
This is what's making it quite difficult, because we're getting a lot of questions over here from downwinders in the UK, and, you know, chatting to Glenn down in Cornwall, who for me is leading the way a lot with a lot of the big downwinders that he's doing. But he's trying to suss out the differences here between Australia, between Hawaii, between wherever else. And he just, because we watch so much footage and YouTube videos of how to downwind, let's say, videos. But from what you're saying and from what he's saying, like, he's listening to all these things and he's still not getting anywhere. And he's a very, very proficient paddler and waterman, but still not getting anywhere. And it does seem like...
In Hawaii?
He's in Cornwall. So Glenn's...
So where's he having trouble?
Glenn's over here in Cornwall. And he's trying to wrap, because obviously he's looking at everyone going, right, you need to be on 1099, 999, or, you know, whatever it is, and you need to be doing this, this, and this, and it's just not working for him. So he's had to take a step back, and he's having to learn downwinding himself from himself, because there's no one really else doing it in these shittier conditions. And he's chatted now recently a lot with John Mann, who's obviously in the Netherlands.
Such a cool guy.
Which I think water states are probably a little bit more similar, because, yeah, again, we can't compare our water conditions to Australia. We can't compare them to America. I have some really interesting chats with Glenn.
Yeah.
One recently, because he's just dropped onto the Spitfires for downwinding, but obviously there was very little information out there about Spitfires being used for downwinding. But for him, it's like completely transformed his downwinding because of these confused water states that we have in the UK.
Yeah.
The arts are just like they're fantastic, they're brilliant.
Make life difficult for you in those conditions.
So much more difficult. So chatting to him recently,
yeah,
it's changed everything for him because he's suddenly got something. He calls them like confused water states. You know, if it's a prime day and everything's lining up in the same direction, yeah, he'll take an Art or an Art Pro or whatever he's got at the minute. Whereas if 9 times out of 10, that's not what we get here. So having something a little bit more forgiving, which has now turned, seems to be the Spitfires for him, allows him to navigate those conditions far more.
Yeah. I really wish that I'd emphasised that more in my review video of the Spitfires, and I am going to be doing a follow-on because...
I can't take anymore. Give me a couple more weeks till you release that, please.
All right. Do I continue now, or am I going to get shut down again?
Go on.
It's... What I said in my video was that I would always choose the Arts for downwinding, and I never thought anything would change that. But the Art Pros are very, 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 very good in the right conditions. I would only ever use the Spitfires if it was short period, sort of messy or wind-driven swell. Now I'm beginning to sort of change my mind because I do think they can cope with more and more and more. I think when I said that, I was so much used to the higher aspect foils for downwinding. It takes an adjustment of style to be able to deal with a different range of foils in the same conditions. Now I instantly saw that the Spitfires were really good for that short period wind generated swell. But I'm now beginning to think that they are also very, very, very good for people, especially learning in sort of longer period or more ocean-driven swell. I mean, the Art Pros, for winging, I would always use them, the Arts or the Art Pros. But for downwinding, either on a prone or sup board, completely different. And I would always advise somebody to go for the Spitfires or the HPS, something like that, over the high aspect foils when they're learning, regardless of the conditions. Because the Art Pros are amazing if you can keep your speed up. So if you're proficient enough at sup or prone downwinding, then yeah, they are the choice for sure. But what I'm finding here in Australia, we have, depending on whether it's a southwest or a northwest, northwest winds are very inconsistent and the swell is disturbed because you've got all sorts of things going on. And that's why I think I had so much trouble when I first got here, because I was using the high aspect foils, different swell patterns and everything else, and I had some aborted, failed downwind runs. But when I started using the Spitfires, I find they can cope with those conditions a lot easier. It's not so high octane, that the Arts and the Art Pros especially are just all about, you know, you've got to keep them going. When you can keep them going, oh my God, they're amazing. But if you want a gentle introduction into downwinding, regardless of the conditions, yeah, I completely agree. The Spitfires or the HPS, if you've got them, are amazing. They really are. They're very forgiving. I would completely agree with... did you say Greg or Glenn?
Glenn.
Who are you talking about? Glenn, yeah. And John Mann, absolutely. I have so much respect for that guy. He knows what he's talking about. I will always listen to his advice. It's always... based on, you know, fact and not opinion, and he'll give it to you straight no matter
what. It's a shame that, and I know it's just a fact of life, but so we have to, you know, we listen to you because you've gone through that shit period of learning yourselves, which is the same as anybody when you
still
learn. Well, exactly, and you're just at a different level in front of us, but especially the people that were at the forefront of it. You know, I love talking to Glenn because I know he's out there trying to do it day in, day out. You know, we enjoy talking to these people. Rich down in Bantham, for instance, who's been winging longer than anybody here. And I look at my learning process or how long it's taken me, and I think, how would I have done that without... I'm not the sort of person that would go out and probably do it by myself with absolutely no idea of what's going on. I'm not going to... going to learn something that doesn't already exist, I guess. So to be one of those people seems very impressive. Very impressive.
And another person you might want to talk to, or you, maybe you watch his videos already, is Dave West. He's an absolute legend. I love Dave. He is the most down-to-earth, humble guy you'll ever meet. He's stormed onto the foiling scene. I don't know when, but I can remember that watching his first few videos and going, oh, this guy's pretty good for a new guy. Never seen him before, whatever. And then literally within a year, he'd overtaken me in terms of skill by a long way. And his videos are super helpful. I found them really helpful as well. And I just love his sense of humor. And he's a straight up guy. And I think he's helping a lot of people out there. So he's somebody else that I would always...
Is this copyright infringement, Dave West, ready?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
What's this?
We have a bone to pick with Dave West about stealing... We're convinced that his Surely foil not. Lord was inspired by the Wang Lords, copyrighted by Generic Foiling Pod.
And then he stole...
I have
West.
No idea.
And then he stole
this.
Our best mate, didn't he? Straight came in with a podcast and stole our best mate, Jeremy.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Jezza, I tell you, I out of all the people you guys have interviewed, I've loved that interview the most. That podcast with Jeremy Warren, partly, right, so...
Is it partly
I was with
it
Jezza,
was really about foiling?
No, it's just, it made me reminisce of a lot of conversations that we had out there in Thailand for that Sonova Board Dealers Conference, where I actually met with Axis... The Axis crew, the team, family, whatever you like to call them. So Adrian and Evan, I'd spoken to a lot, but never met until that trip. And Jeremy Warmup was there, Dylan Bez was there. Oh my God, I learned so much from that trip. And yeah, it's eye opening when you meet people for the first time, and especially in a place like Thailand. It was a good trip. Not that I'm going to tell you many of the stories.
Oh, we heard a few.
I heard your interview, your podcast with Adrian as well. So I'm not going to elaborate on anything else.
One thing. So if we do actually ever make it to this AWSI next year, I am so excited about just sitting down for a beer and talking with all these people that we've chatted to, because like Jeremy, I would now class as a friend to a certain degree, because we've chatted so much, and it would, like you said, it's
you bond when you're talking about something that you both that passionate about. You do. You bond,
I think
you
I'm
going to
get absolutely shit faced there at the AWSI. might make a mess of myself. That'd be good.
All I'll say is make sure you order some watermelon juice and tell them to leave the bunny ears behind.
All right, we'll
in combination with a peanut butter coffee.
that's definitely a hood river thing, definitely an American thing.
Talk to me about Foil Drive Europe then. What's occurring there? How has that come about? Why have you left Oman for this? What's going on?
It's a crazy story. It really is. I mean, it's crazy to me because I'm living it, and it feels like a bit of a dream world, to be honest. So, I don't know whether it was, partly the Axis thing or just forming a friendship with Paul and Ben through my use of Foil Drive, but it's like when the universe wants something to happen. It's sort of made my relationship with Adrian and Evan, the Axis family, and my relationship with Paul and Ben, the Foil Drive family. And I suppose COVID and everything that led me to be in a position for Adrian and Evan to ask me to be a team rider, and for Paul and Ben to say, Dom, we want you to come and work for us. And it literally, I will never forget the conversation that me and Paul had. It took me 20 minutes of us talking before I actually believed what he was saying. I genuinely thought he was joking. And looking back on the conversation, I was lucky that I didn't actually talk myself out of a job, because I was just being so sarcastic and so like throwing it back at him in all sorts of weird ways. But luckily he persevered and convinced me that he was on the level. And Foil Drive... Foil Drive is something that I think has taken not only them by surprise in its popularity, but has taken the foiling world by surprise. Because to begin with, there was this joke about Foil Drive. It's for old guys who need help getting it up. And you know, it was literally for old guys, unfit guys, injured guys and gals. You know, well, wait a second, guys. This is very sexist of me, but anyway, it's for anybody who needed a bit of help.
Yeah, we have got 7%, isn't it, Freddie? 7% female audience. It's don't forget
awful.
Them, Dom.
It really is terrible. Anyway, so he basically said, because he knew through our friendship, through chats and everything, he knew that I was, you know, thinking about leaving Oman, going back to Europe. That was my ideal plan, to try and find a teaching job in Europe, if not to get back to the UK. And without me realizing it, him and Ben had been talking, saying, well, we really need to get this out there into the rest of the world. They got Australia covered. They're doing a pretty good job in America. But Europe, taxes are high. Europe and the UK, taxes are high, and it's very difficult for people to justify spending that amount of money when it's got to come from Australia. And if something goes wrong, it's got to get back there, and warranty issues is a pain in the ass, and taxes are high, like I said. And really, Europe and the UK prefer to have boots on the ground, somebody in the local area to be able to deal with, someone to take responsibility. So they knew that they were going to have somebody in Europe or the UK in order to expand into that part of the world. And they knew me. They knew I was thinking of going back that way. Crazy on their part, but they did quite like me. So they invited me out in my October half term, completely under false pretenses, just to have a holiday. And by the end of it, they'd pretty much made up their minds about offering the job to me. But they didn't at the time. They strung me along, waited until they, I suppose, got, you know, a lot of things in place before offering me the job. And yeah, Forge of Europe is basically we're almost there now, setting up a subsidiary company.
You've been banging on about it for a while.
Europe. I know, it's just taken a long time. Because so get the complications you can imagine of an Australian company setting up a company in Europe and they want a UK citizen to run it. It's not easy.
Just, and it's this suspicious UK citizen that's been hiding in the Middle East for a decade.
Well, don't hold that against me. Yeah, I mean, even without Brexit, this would have been a living nightmare from the paperwork point of view. But we got the Dutch on it. They are very, very efficient. They know what they're talking about. They get things done. It's just there's a lot of paperwork to sort out. And yeah, it's going to be cool because, you know, I will hopefully be Full Drive's, you know, basically I'll be their rep. That's all it'll be. I'll be a glorified rep. I will be servicing Europe and the UK for Full Drive. But I will also, you know, part of my role, other than, you know, fulfilling orders and taking on dealers and that sort of thing, will be to continue to create awareness of Foil Drive and all the new products that they've got in line for the future, because I will be putting on demo days. I will be going to our dealers to arrange, you know, demo events. I'll be attending trade shows. I'll be, you know, trying to spread the love. That's really going back to my hippie roots again, aren't I? Damn, what's going on with me?
Where are you going to be based?
The Netherlands to begin with, because they are the gateway to the whole of Europe and everywhere. I mean, they are super organized, super efficient. They have warehousing, they have Amsterdam Airport, they've got Rotterdam Seaport, they've got distribution networks. It all runs smoothly. And you name me one country in the whole of Europe and the UK that you can say that and has a coastline, and you know, I'll consider it.
You'll be eating plenty of stroke waffles.
Yeah, I keep being told that the best ways to eat those. But, coffee, hot chocolate.
When's the move? When's the move there then? Are you
very soon
moving everything there?
That's the idea. Yeah, me and Anna, my partner, will I'm leaving Australia in about 2 weeks. But I'm not going directly to the Netherlands because there's other stuff to do. So I'll be coming back via the UAE to see our Middle Eastern dealer, I suppose you could call them, Windward DBX. They are our sort of the only Foil Drive in the Middle East. They're based in the UAE. So I'll be staying with them for a few a few days, maybe up to a week, to do some filming and just hanging out with them and chilling. You may have heard of a guy called Victor Harris. He's big on the 4WD owners group. He's just an Aussie that's been living in Dubai for the last 20 plus years. Very, very successful businessman. He is a 4WD nut. And yeah, he gets up to some crazy antics. Recently, he came to Australia for a holiday, foiled the hell out of, I don't know where it was, Byron Bay or somewhere with Adam Bennett and his crew. Then came to visit us. We foiled the hell out of South Adelaide coast with him, and he's gone back to Dubai, and he's offered me to go foiling on his new trimaran. So I just couldn't resist it. I've got to go back to the UK, so why not go back via Dubai for one last hurrah there?
And, well, these are good friends to have. You've got to make the most. This is why Liam and I are friends, because he's got a boat and I need to play on a boat.
You've got your uses.
You've got to have those friends.
That's nice. He only wants you for your boat. So from Dubai, or the UAE, I suppose, I'll go back to the UK, spend some time with my family. Oh my God, I miss my family. This trip should have been, 2 to 3 months. It's turned out to be 5 to 6 months. I am desperate to spend some time with them. From there, I'll visit some key people in the UK and Europe before landing in...
Key people?
If you want me to, I'll be more than happy to come along and say hi, and you know, it would be great to spend some time on the water with you guys if you wanted to.
Go for a beer and a foil.
Sounds good to me. Throw in a pizza.
Schmocking a pancake.
So yeah, all of that before I actually land in the Netherlands, but we should be operational sometime in November. Shit time to start a foiling water sports business in Europe, November, but it's got to happen sometime.
We got to do something over the winter time, I guess.
Yeah.
When are you looking at being in the UK then, roughly?
I would say mid October for a week or two. So yeah, if you want me to come over, I will. It'll be.
Well, yeah. If you're going to go for a session, if you're going to be down our way, then yeah, let's do something. We can.
Wicked. It's a date.
Foil. Perfect. Sounds good.
You need to. I want to see up close and personal. We haven't really talked about it as we did last time, Dom. I want to see up close and personal prone foiling in waves with 4WD with no paddling. That's what I want to see.
Oh, mate, you are talking my language now. It's just, I, again, so many things are blowing my mind. And the whole thing about the fact that I'm on a prone board, surf foiling waves, downwinding, it's just crazy. I never ever dreamed that it would be possible. My dream was to sup downwind. And don't get me wrong, I love wing foiling, I love wing downwinding. I'm not into jumping, I'm not into freestyle, far too scared of that. But it's that because of, for me, when I was sup surfing, I loved the surfing aspect of it. I've never been a surfer, a proper surfer, still not a proper surfer, but I loved it when I was sup surfing. And then to be able to foil surf was just the ultimate. And I thought, sup surfing, and sup downwinding, that's it for me. And then through my wake foiling, I then thought, oh, I'm really enjoying these short, quick, snappy turns that I'm doing behind the boat on my 4.0 boards. I wonder if I could use a smaller board with 4WD, the Assist Plus. And I used a 5.3 by, I think it was 20 inches wide and 43 litres Sonova board, proper prone board. And it worked, but it was shit because I had to put, it didn't have any foot strap inserts. So I had to put the board, the box with the battery in it, way in front of my front foot. And I was just messing around. And by that time I'd got God, I really should mention Apple Tree Surfboards, because I was an ambassador for them for a while, and so much respect for their product, and loved their boards, construction, performance, everything, just amazing. Vega is, again, like Paul here at 4WD, there are certain people in the foiling world I have so much respect for. There's Paul and Ben here. There's Vega at Apple Tree, Adrian and Evan at Axis. But yeah, I was lucky enough to be taken on by them as an ambassador, and I got their Apple Slice V2 wing foil board, 4.9 by 60 litres. And I just thought, what the hell? I'll try it. And it had footstrap inserts. So I mounted the box next to my front foot. Actually, first of all, I put it in front of my front foot, but it's a 4.9. I thought, surely that's got to feel better than a 5.3. The swing weight was awful with the battery box right at the nose of the board. So again, I put it in the same setup and it wasn't very good. And I was just looking at it and I thought, well, why not? If I'm prone foiling, it won't work for wing foiling because you've got to ride switch stance. But if I put the box on the toe side edge of the board next to my front foot, I'm goofy. So I tried it and it was amazing. It just absolutely worked. It was like the weight from the box disappeared. Didn't get in my way ever. Okay, you can't lie on the board and paddle, but it's not really important. You know, up on my elbows, the box wasn't even digging into my chest. And cruise control at 36%, I can actually, you know, go out back faster than I can paddle anyway. So, yeah, that was it. And then the next weekend, I tried it with my 4.0 board, not expecting to be able to get up on foil, but I did, and it was amazing. And, it was just one of those. I never expected it to work, but it did. And again, I wasn't the first person to try it on a prone board, because Paul sent me a picture of a friend of his setup that was, I think it was a 5.6 or a 5.8 prone board with it right at the front of the nose, and that inspired my first try. But putting it next to my front foot was what changed it. That was the game changer.
Well, this is something we need to have a play on at some point, just because that does appeal.
I can remember Liam telling me when our chat that the internet swallowed, that you've tried it a few times, Liam, and can you remember, or can you just say, I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but what were your initial thoughts of four drive from the time you've used it so far?
I was very impressed at, well, we had that four drive assist plus, didn't we? I was impressed by the power of the unit in terms of it is legitimately usable as an e-foil, which surprised me. But the difference
for
was
short periods of time, yeah.
For short periods of time, sure. Mm. But it actually felt like foiling. I don't think, as somebody that started kite foiling years ago, and as you know, I found it really interesting, like tangent, but last night when I was trying to sup foil and I had my disaster, I used that 1300 PNG of Freddy's for the first time. I've never ridden a foil that's got a span of more than like 80 something centimeters. I cannot ride those foils because they've just got,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Side note. But e-foiling to me has just never felt like foiling actually. Like, yes, you get the sensation of it being smooth and everything, but it's also damped. It's all got so much mass to it. Whereas I was
completely
just surprised
agree.
The foil drive was like, I'm e-foiling, but this feels like the normal sensation of foiling, and you can actually turn and all the rest of it. I was also surprised at how easily it would get up, you know, both smaller board that we used and that bigger board as well. The thing for me was I found the transition very difficult from, I was trying to sort of e-foil into waves and then turn the throttle off. And that transition was just quite difficult, but I think that's largely down to me and technique, because having said that in a previous episode, the number of messages that I got from people that have got foil drive just giving me tips and just being like, yeah, look, this is how you do it, or this is how I do it, or whatever. It's clearly very doable.
The foil drive family,
the
foil drive family are so helpful. They really are. I mean, it started off, the foil drive owners group started off with Paul and Ben themselves answering every single question that was posted on there. And now we're at the stage where they rarely get a chance to answer first.
Yeah.
They still will, but the foil drive, you know, owners are literally on it, answering, giving advice, being helpful, being super, you know, friendly. It's just crazy. It's so cool that everybody's just trying to help each other out. So, right, I'm glad that you've just said that, because foil drive, using foil drive, is a technique that's very specific to foil drive. It's not e-foiling. It's not an e-foil. Although you can sort of motor around continually like that sort of thing for short periods of time, it's not what it's designed to do. It can do it a bit, but it's designed to be used as an assist, where you go up on foil, and then, like you say, you've got that transition where instead of, while you're using the motor, you've not only got forward thrust. You've got lift, because especially with the lower down it is on the mast, that whole mast is acting like a lever, and it's basically forcing up. It's forcing the nose up. So when
it gives you more front foot pressure, for sure.
Definitely, yeah. And when you pull, when you take your finger off the trigger and you lose that forward thrust, you also lose a lot of the lift, and the board just wants to go nose down into the water. So you've got to transition. You've got to either stay in your normal position, whatever it is for refoiling, and then when you take the finger off the trigger, you've got to shift your feet back a little bit fairly quickly. Or what I prefer to do now anyway is I'm constantly leaning over my front foot when I'm using the motor. And then when I take my finger off, I just shift my body position so my center of mass is now evenly balanced between my feet like I would be for normal foiling. And then, you know, you've just got to get used to it. And foil drive, the technique, is a technique like any skill you learn in foiling. It takes you time to develop, but once you've developed that skill, it's literally second nature, and you don't even think about doing it. Even with the mast, even with the motor right at the bottom of the mast next to the fuselage, you use it enough, and you can transition from using the motor to not using the motor without even thinking about it. But I think where some people have got a little bit confused is, you know, they expect to be able to use foil drive instantly like that without having to learn the technique or the skill. And whether it's, you know, using it with a big board down to a small board, we've had a few people, not many thankfully, but a few people who have like seen my videos and other videos of people using them on prone boards with fairly small foils, and they buy their foil drive for the first time. Maybe they are, but often they're not a particularly proficient foiler in the first place. And they email us saying, the foil drive that I bought hasn't got enough power. I can't get up on my board. What's going wrong? And we say, well, please send a video. We'll try and give you some advice. And they're literally ploughing the board through the water like that at an angle, never allowing it time to get the speed up that you need to take off. And it's a very specific technique. You've got to push down. As you accelerate, you're generating more upward lift on the nose. You've got to keep the nose down as you're accelerating, and the idea is to get the board to pop up onto the surface of the water, so you're now skimming across the top of the water. Literally, the board is now sort of planing. And at that point, then you can pop up or stand up. But if you try and do it too early, you're just going to sink the board. And of course, even a small angle pushing through the water is creating so much drag. You're never going to build up the speed you need to take off.
No, I think that we used actually the smallish 60-something litre board as our first go. And I think that I agree with you that you're only going to struggle with the getting the thing going if you don't have a lot of... It doesn't even have to be foiling experience. You just have to have very limited board experience. To not have enough power to get that thing going with some reasonable size equipment, that's definitely a failure of the person. It's that technique that you talk about that we'd need practice of, because we would want to use it to, you know, get yourself in, have it mounted really high on the mast, get yourself into a wave and then transition.
Completely. Yeah, that's where it's at.
But and my friend talks about that as a bit of an ollie technique.
Yeah, your friend speaks basically. True. Wise
yeah,
person.
And that does make sense. The thing that I'm really curious about is actually using it instead of paddling as you would on a small board, but prone. And whereas at the minute my level of prone foiling is at a stage where I need to be, I have caught green waves, but generally if I go prone foiling, I'm looking for white water, looking for that easy takeoff. And then going to a spot where either that reforms into a cleaner wave or just, you know, trying to pump back out something else. Whereas I'm curious to have a go with it prone foiling, but actually sitting further out and seeing whether you can take off early and using it effectively instead of paddling. And I wonder whether there almost isn't the same transition required there, because perhaps you're getting rid of the throttle by the time you've caught the waves, you're not even actually foiling yet. Maybe it almost looks like pull the trigger, get the board into the wave, get the board planing onto the wave, get rid of the throttle, then stand up, perhaps. Is that what you do?
Look, you're not going to work now. You realise that. You've just asked something that's that's going to take a while. I'll try my best to be brief, but it's so much. There is so much involved in what you've just asked. The short-ish answer is that you can take off in any way you like with four drive. You can take off heading towards the waves or the bumps. You can take off in green water or sorry, what are you saying? The white water, is that what you were saying? But you can take off as per a normal prone takeoff, but or you can just take off on flat water. You can, you know, match the speed of a bump. It's any way you like. It's just a lot easier. Right, let me elaborate. So for taking off as per normal prone foil technique, you can be way off the shoulder because you don't need the same amount of sort of power from a wave face that you would need to you know, get up prone foiling normally. You can be way away from the shoulder. You can be on just the smallest, sort of lowest, fattest bump that you can imagine. As long as you start accelerating and have enough time to reach the correct speed, which will be the speed that the bump behind you is traveling. And then you'll feel, as it approaches you, you'll feel it pick you up like you feel a wave picking you up if you're surfing or whatever. And at that point, you know that you are going the right speed and you can just come up to your knees, stand up, or do a proper pop-up if you're really that good enough and you want to. So you can do it normal technique, but you don't have to be on the wave face. You don't have to be at the critical section to be able to do it because you're getting the thrust from foil drive. More thrust that you could possibly generate through paddling, more thrust than, you know, the, not from the wave, but, you know, the combination of the thrust and just that tiny little energy from the bump is enough to get you up on foil. I've caught the most ridiculously fast low rolling swell. It's a little bit like full drive lets you do toe-ins without the jet ski, because if you accelerate in early enough, you will then be planing on the board on the surface of the water, building up speed before the swell gets to you. And when the swell finally gets to you, you are matching its speed. You can then come up on foil, and you might need to stay on foil with the board just above the water, so keeping the props in the water, just to pick up a little bit more speed so that you can then match the speed of the fast rolling swell, and then you ollie up onto foil and you're foiling it as normal. Or there's a nice clean section in between waves, and as long as there's not an onshore wind, you can literally pull the trigger, power as you're heading towards the wave. Again, it's all about getting the board on top of the water, planing, then you pop up, and as the wave comes towards you, you turn onto it, and you know, you trigger off as you turn onto the wave, and you know, it's, like I say, there are so many different ways of getting onto foil. You don't need a wave, but you will conserve battery power if you do use the wave to help you, because obviously any push you get from the wave means you can use less energy from the motor, from the battery.
Yeah. So that's what I want to explore. I kind of want to explore the different methods actually in some reasonable swell. I'm just really curious. I can see, you know, getting up. I'm thinking on a glassy day at a surf beach when you've got a reasonable period swell. Yeah, you have got big flat gaps, and I can see that it would be easy to just go right. Full power, I'm up on foil, turn onto the wave, and once I'd figured that transition to the transition whilst actually on foil to get onto the wave, I can see how you do that all day long, and that would be almost your most straightforward method of doing it. But I can also see how you'd use your battery the quickest.
The transition depends on what technique you're getting up. If you're getting up to you know, on that swell, then you'll need to sort of carry on e-foiling a little bit, and then you ollie up, releasing the trigger. That's the transition. If you're catching a wave, then as you pop up, you have to release the trigger because you do not want to be having the extra thrust at the same time that the wave has picked you up properly.
And I almost think I might prefer that.
If at all possible, I prefer to do that takeoff. And again, board size, foil size, it's all, you know, it's all dependent on the conditions, but it's, foil drive allows you to use the foils that you would ideally like to ride. You know, I couldn't get up on foil with tiny little foils for most of these applications. So when I'm doing flat water pumping, I'll use my 4.2. If I'm doing full surfing, I'll use my 4.6. If I'm catching swell or downwinding, I will use my, what I've now got is we've had a local shaper called Dale Chapman, DC Foils. He's designed some boards based on his proper downwind style boards. He's got two, one called the Harpoon, one called the Blade. So I had one made on the style of the Blade, and another Full Drive member of Full Drive crew had one made on the design of the Harpoon. And we've been testing out different sizes, shapes, everything else. And it's minus 5.0 by 19 by 55 litres. Trav's is 5.5 by 19 by, I think, 60 litres. And Paul's is 5.2 by 20 by, I think it's 55 litres. So these boards just make it so easy to get up on foil in downwinding conditions. Ridiculously easy. I'm using, so right, I said earlier on in the podcast that wing foiling, downwinding with a wing, wind hand wing, I find so much easier than prone or sup downwinding, because you can't just pull the wind wing in and you get that instant acceleration from the wind wing. With prone or sup downwinding, you've got to keep your speed up somehow. And the only way you can do that, if you lose the energy of the swell, or, you know, there's a flat section, you've got to pump. Pumping, you can't accelerate anywhere near as well as you can by pulling in a wind wing. So you've either got to generate the energy, the acceleration to keep your speed up above stall speed, either by carving or by pumping, both of which are less efficient than using a wind wing. So it's much harder prone foiling, sup foiling, than it is wind winging, downwinding, in my opinion. But with foil drive and this new style of board, it's basically a short downwind design board, I can now use foils that are two sizes smaller than what I would normally use. So for wind wing, I would be on, say, the Art 899 or the 1001 for wind winging, maybe even the Art Pro 951. But I would never dream of using those foils. They're too small for prone or downwinding. And apart from now with foil drive, I'm still not using those ones. I mean, the smallest one that I use now is the Art Pro 1051. But nobody else, no matter what their skill level, no matter what board they're riding, if they're on, if they're downwinding with me at the same time, so we know it's the same conditions, they're using one or two sizes foils bigger than me. These guys are paddling up. They're very, very proficient paddlers, very, very proficient downwinders, but they're on these giant 7 or 8 foot long Barracuda style boards. They cannot paddle up in those conditions on the Art 1051. So they're restricted to using, you know, one or two sizes bigger or a slower foil. And there's little old me, who I feel really guilty because my skill level isn't as good as theirs. But I'm using a tiny foil and I'm literally going like a rocket ship. And if I want to get up on foil, I can just pull the trigger straight up, because this downwind style board allows me to, it's, you know, it's a small version of the big ones. So it's the same principle occurs. The glide and the board speed is incredible. You get up on foil. Oh, and it has the added bonus of being 55 litres, which I used to do downwinders on my 4.6 in Oman, 37 litres. When I first got here, I did my first downwinder on a 4.6 35 litre board, and it scared me witless because there were dolphins, and to begin with, all I saw was the fin, and I thought, oh my God, that's a great white, I'm going to get eaten. And I realised how vulnerable I was. Literally, two-thirds of my body was in underwater. And I then realised, if something goes wrong, I've got to paddle in best part of, you know, 1.5 to 2K in these conditions. It's just, is that going to happen? On a 55 litre board, 50 to 60 litre board,
yeah,
I think I could. I think I could. And also, only a little bit of me is in the water, so I don't know, I'm fooling myself about the great white situation. If that's going to happen, it's going to happen. But yeah, I do feel a little bit more secure.
You're saying you think you could. I'm assuming by you saying I think that you haven't had any significant run out of battery or foil drive failure having to swim.
No. In my first five session, first downwind runs here, two of them were complete failures because I just hadn't learned to read the swell properly by that time. And the third one wasn't really my fault.
But you say failure, that doesn't... I'm saying, have you actually had to paddle in a couple of miles?
Well, not a couple of miles, but over a kilometre for sure. Yeah, there was...
Because you ran the battery flat.
Oh, I see what you mean. No, right. So I got to the point where it didn't have enough power to get me up on foil anymore, but it definitely had enough power for to get me into shore.
To pootle back in.
Yeah. But, you know, I felt very vulnerable on that 37-litre board, and I was paddling with one arm to try and speed up the process, you know, because, you know, what's what's around the coast of Australia is a little bit more angry and lethal than what's around the coast of Oman.
I think we're going to see in the next sort of 18 months, I suspect we'll see a lot of performance wing boards sort of around people's body weight that are that scaled down downwind shape.
I know you will. there's something coming that's very exciting. Very, very exciting things coming. Collaborations between my favourite two brands. Can you guess which they are?
Ah, very good.
Boards, masts, all sorts of things. It's been so... Like, I cannot get over that I've been helping Adrian Roper design... he's obviously been the driving force and the lead designer, but he... We wanted to do a range of prone downwind boards that are suitable for foil drive, predominantly suitable for foil drive, but I genuinely think they will be amazing for so many different applications. Because these boards I've been talking about, not only do we use them for downwinding, prone downwinding, but they are very, very good for winging. Travis, being one of the foil drive crew, he's been just prone foiling with them. If you're on swell that doesn't peak up at all, you've got no chance of prone foiling without foil drive to get up on foil. But, you know, with these boards, their glide is so good. You just, you know, just need a tiny little bit of a push and it helps you.
Yeah, very good. No, I think, that the evolution continues, doesn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
We're not saturated yet.
No, there's still so many different avenues to explore, so many things that haven't been tried yet. I mean, AWSI, it was crazy how every brand was, you know, touting all of these vast improvements to their wings, to their kites, to their boards, to their foils. And some of them are. Some of them are very significant. But and I don't think we're anywhere near the stage of, you know, kite surfing or windsurfing where every change is it really better or is it just a different style now?
I think there are some things that are being made better, but I definitely think with any sport it will get to the stage where, I mean, it already is slightly in the stage where fashion dictates what's marketed for sure. You see that in surfing, you see that in kite surfing, like, where just what the pros are chasing, it tends to be quite a community thing at the top, doesn't it? And when you're doing something so much, you might get a bit bored of one thing and you might start trying a slightly different style, and then the community sort of takes it on because it's like, oh, well, there's something we can focus on, and then you get bored of that and then you focus on something else. And to be honest, the punters kind of follow the way because the brands use it as a marketing exercise, and so we all follow along for the ride, you know.
Do you know what that that is exactly why I'm so happy to be with Axis, because to me, they don't follow hype. They just do what they think will be useful for foilers. They really do. The Axis Facebook group recently, there've been obviously two big releases, the Spitfires and the Art Pros. And, you know, for the vast majority of people, they are happy as pigs in shit because, you know, these are significant improvements and they are completely different ranges. But as ever, you get a few critics who, you know, some people are saying, oh, it's just hype. You know, we've bought all these arts and now you expect us to buy the Art Pros. Well, for a start, nobody expects anyone to buy anything that they don't want or think would be useful for them. But you also, on the other hand, get people who are still saying, well, I'd like one that's in between the arts and the art pros. And it's like, well, hang on a minute, we're producing too many foils. but we're not producing enough. What the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Now I'm not a part of the design process. I don't think I'm not high enough in the echelons of the Axis sort of design team by any means. But Adrian and Evan do send me some foils occasionally if they think they're in my bag, sort of thing, and I'll give feedback to them. Whether they pay any attention to my feedback or not, I do not know. But we have some very interesting conversations, and they know what I like and what I'm capable of riding, and they won't send me, the tiny little razor thin, 699 and lower sort of thing. There's no point. That's not me. But
Jeremy's big wave repertoire.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh, and there's so many cool things coming in terms of fast wing foiling foils and big wave type things, and at the opposite end of the spectrum as well. So just I'd say to people, please be patient. They do what they can. But at the same time, they are not going to release something that is not fit for purpose. And I think what a lot of people don't understand, which could actually be quite useful for people to understand, is that if you have a range of foils, it's a bit like a standard deviation curve. It's this bell-shaped curve where you've got the middle of the range are pretty easy to design. This is, in layman's terms and my very inexperienced level. But the outliers, the really small and the really big foils, are actually super difficult to design and get right, because you can't just downscale and upscale one shape and expect it to work in those outlying extreme sizes. It just doesn't happen. So there's so much more R&D. There's so much more prototype testing. There's so much more, Axis sent me this one foil, which I was so stoked to get. I was so super excited to get. It was part of the Art Pro range. And it was the first foil that I actually used when I got to Australia. They knew I was coming here, so they sent a whole bunch of stuff for me here. And I got on the water. It was almost my first session here, and I could not get up onto foil with it. And when I did, the very few times that I did, I couldn't pump at all. And I thought, all right, jet lag, what is wrong with me? Surely this isn't me. And one of those very few times when the air turned
blue.
I was blaming myself. Going, you absolute beep, 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 beep. I was laying into myself verbally like nothing else. And I, to my absolute embarrassment, I got off the water and there was this fisherman. He goes, you're having a bad day out there, mate. And I was going, oh, I'm so sorry. I really am. Because obviously the wind must have carried my expletives way on shore. But anyway, I messaged Adrian and said, I'm really sorry, but I can't give any feedback yet. I just had the most disastrous session. I don't know what's wrong with me. And he messaged me back, cheeky fucker. He said, oh, I forgot to tell you, Olivia Piana tried to pump that up for 45 minutes straight and she couldn't. Yeah, there's definitely something wrong with it. We should have told you. I was like, you utter shit. I was like, I've just had the worst session of my life and that could have been avoided. But the reason I say this, the reason why I tell this is because that foil taught them more about how to improve foils of a certain size because of its failure. Because they only changed one aspect of the profile or the whatever it was. And by changing it in one way that they know it has an adverse effect in a particular way, it was actually its initial lift. So it just literally took away all of its initial lift. Adrian's so cool. He geek out all the time. So he runs these graphs and he's got proper data. So he knows the exact speed that you have to be for lift, the amount of drag per speed as, one increases, what happens to the other. And he worked out that above, I think it was 12, I can't remember if it was meters per second or miles per hour, above 12, whatever it was in units of speed, it performed amazingly. But below that speed, it was the dog of all dogs. It really was. So they learned so much from that they were then able to transfer it over into what would work. And that helped them to finalise the Art Pros into just, I think they are the best foils for winging. What I do in winging anyway, maybe not freestyle, because I don't do that. Downwinding in the right conditions, if you've got long period swell, consistent conditions, they are the mutts nuts. And, you know, for a lot of people, they are very good at surfing them. I mean, they turn so well and they glide forever. I don't surf with the Art Pros. There's no way. Maybe that, you know, long rolling swell, like I said before, is more akin to toe foiling than surfing in my mind. But for riding proper waves, more about the sort of the Florida style surf foiling. Mike Pedigo, Eric Antonsen, I really, you know, I analyse the hell out of everything that they do. Josh Koo, oh my God, how good is he? Him and Kane DeWild, up there with the most stylish foilers in existence. I mean, I'm never going to emulate what Jeremy Wilmot does. He's on waves like bigger than a house. I'm never going to do that. He's in a class of his own. And you know, Oscar Johansson, they are so amazing.
He can do it in anything. Well, yeah, quite impressive for a big guy.
He was in Thailand. He was ripping on a foot high rubbish and making it look good. And you know, I'm looking at him going, that's amazing, but I can never do it. So, what I prefer, like here last weekend, we had on the mid coast, we had the most ridiculously big swell come in, and we're talking head and a half high on a shore break. It was just like Trav and a couple of other people here. They were charging, literally just charging down the line. They were going for the biggest faces, carving and charging down the line. I was literally peeling off the back as soon as it got overhead high. I was just, this is not what I'm used to at all. Give me, you know, 1 to 3 foot.
Get me back to a mile. Yeah.
that sort of thing. Yeah. I know my place.
All right. Well, it's been it's good to have you. Well, like you said, have you back, even though it's not having you back. And hopefully this one's recorded successfully this time. So,
God, I hope
thanks
so.
Again for your time again.
No, thank you. Honestly, I've had such a good time chatting to you guys. It's been fun. And I can't wait to meet you as well.
We'll have to look forward to a visit in October.
Yeah. Well, October. Yeah. It could be mid to end October. Yeah. If it all works out.
Let's see how we go.
Sweet.
All right. Cheers, Dom.
Nice one, Liam. Cheers.